Thanks very much, Paul. Great to be down here in Cork. I've got a bit of a sore throat and a bit of a cough, so if you don't mind, I won't use the mic. Can you hear me at the back?
Yeah.
Good. This poem was written quickly. It fell into my lap. It's a bugger of a poem, too smart for its own good. It needs to be kicked into shape, wheels and with a smile on the other side of the face. This poem doesn't know its place. It wanders around supermax, remembering a better world. It disassociates itself, says nothing, just mutters under its breath. This poem doesn't live here anymore. It packed up and left before the guards kicked in the door. They must have got a tip off, but they were too late. This poem beat them to it, got out by the coastal sphere. This poem is back out on the street, wrapped in a world of its own. You can find it most evenings outside Evergreen, but don't even bother arguing with it. It is wired to the moon. This poem is on a self-destruct course. This poem has issues. It is bad news. If I'd been on the door, this poem would not have been allowed in. It is clearly underage and a danger to itself. This poem should not be let out on its own. This poem was written quickly. It has a limited shelf life. Consume immediately. Do not reheat or freeze. This poem is melting by degrees. This poem has lost its voice. It is a mere squeak. The batteries have leaked. It has retired to suburbia where property is cheap. It has curled up and died in front of the TV screen. The bin men refuse to call here anymore. This poem is a used plastic bag tossing on the wind in front of a tear-stained bogside wall. Someone's blood is still not washed away. The dead memory flutters in an endless loop. This poem has time to kill. This poem is up for grabs. It is a war game in an off-the-beaten-track country where only the losers go empty-handed. The odds are against it, but it will not call it quits. It is a bugger as a form, as I already said. This form is completely out of its depth. I remember in 1975, the sergeant came to the house asking questions because there'd been a robbery, he said. They were doing routine checkups from door to door to find out if people had seen or heard anything out of the ordinary. And was I new in the area, he asked. He didn't recall seeing me before. I told him what I knew, which was nothing anyway. Then I checked the paper and listened to the news to find out who's been robbing who again. It had become a bit of a trend back then. But there was no talk of any robbery that day. I thought that's a bit strange. Now, a superintendent can give the word to bug your house, or car, your workplace, or your bed. If he imagines you have a look about you, he might be considering to commit a crime. I wouldn't want him to know what goes on in my head half of the time. I wouldn't stand a chance. I wonder, when they finish cleaning up Limerick, what they're going to do with all their special powers. Does that ring any bells? I'd like to do a decided poem from my second collection, Love's Enterprise Zone. And I'll just take a sip of this lovely water and sarsaparilla, which is good for my throat. Love's Enterprise Zone on a moonlit night. A neighbor's dog was barking, melancholy. I know there's something wrong.
going to remember you. You are gone. This out of my life, written out of the clock. We've done all this till death do us part, Regine, and it hasn't worked for us. No, it has not. Captain's log, day one. This isn't a dream. Dreams are soft and velvety like cotton clouds, candy floss, toilet paper. This is hardcore. I wake up in bed alone, my nose is cold. My feet are cold. My generator's dead. I'm in a fridge called reality. Welcome to the new ice age. I have periscopes to see where we are, but we aren't anywhere. On the horizon, a speck. It could be dust. It could be us. But there is no us. Damn it, Janet. Being in love means never having to say you're sorry. Well, that's what they said in the movie. Well, come on, I was 16 at the time. Later I found out that Hollywood is a myth. It does exactly what it says on the tin. Love, Enterprise Zone, on a moonlit night. A neighbor's dog is barking. Melancholy. 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 Captain's Log, week two. I'm chilling out on Dave Fresh Mode, The Cure, anything to cheer me up, but it's not working. The pain splinters like icicles. I can feel them shivering through my veins. Sometimes being me is just not where I want to be. I want my mum. The neighbor's dog just grins at me each time I take out the trash. There's something he's not telling me. X2 Brute, there will be a day to settle old scores. My therapist says, John, first you find Twitch, then you see the light. He's a real bright spot. You'll never walk alone, love. Enterprise Zone on a moonlit night. A neighbor's dog is barking. Melancholy, melancholy, melancholy. Captain's Log, final entry. All that was light years ago, stardust memory. Soon it will be time to dust down the generator, fire up the engines, and steer course for one last spin down Love's Enterprise Zone. La vita sta buzzando. Carpe diem. Everybody say it with me. Carpe diem. One more time. Carpe diem. Louder. Carpe diem. Over and out. Thank you. For a particular member of the audience tonight who wishes to remain nameless for reasons known only to herself, I will read this next poem called Salad Leaves. I could be fucking you now, to the accompaniment of the traffic noise. This Saturday morning spread out like a damp dishcloth, that washed out feeling touches my gums. We could be wrapped, entangled, no thought of shopping list. I love your teasing lips, you my fingertips. Would I be thinking, how much is there in it for me? We could be holding on for dear life, my thrust against your push, the neatness of the jigsaw pieces, flimsy petals dropping onto a glove. We could be totally exhausted, you ignore the phone, the curiosity of the birds, preposterously loud for all the size of them. Could it be that they are cued in? We could be wondering if in this corner of the universe, in this click and paste, there is more to it than meets the eye. We could be sipping tea and coffee in light dressing gowns, in no big rush to check our emails, the rest of the day left to its own devices. The smell of the morning lingers in the soft cheek, like the salad leaves of a healthy imagination, the vinaigrette of dishes. Who knows what would cross our minds as we do the dishes? This poem is about Virginia Woolf. As you probably know, she put stones to wear herself down into a big baggy overcoat that she was wearing and walked into the nearby river in the village of Rodmell. And that was her final day. People were used to Virginia Woolf walking alone through the countryside and by the river, so it was no strange sight to see her on that day. People actually passed no notice. They were quite used to her wandering around. She was an odd figure, talking to herself in this kind of Middle England or area. This is called Leaving Rodmell. The day I met Virginia Woolf, spring was in the air. Local people on Rodmell Street stopped to stare at this eccentric figure wrapped in shabby furs, tapping time with her walking stick out in all weathers. She invited me to walk with her across the shining downs where the primroses splashed yellow and the startled hare dashed at our sound. Along the bare banks of the river out towards South East Bridge, breathing in the morning light at the cornfield's edge. She talked of the voices for which she had no name, of her soul bursting with rapture and yet consumed with pain. She spoke of all she held dear, burning to the ground, and the clutch of the madness slowly wearing her down. I left her by the cruel hour, with the water rushing high, gold flickering across the hollow beneath the grey sky. I promised to walk on and not to turn back at Rodmell. In the distance I heard the steeple bell carried on the wind, striking 12. The day I met Virginia Woolf, spring was in the air. The prim roses splashed yellow. The cold wind curled her green hair. John Hubbard gave it no second thought to see her walk alone, holding conversation with herself before he turned to home. The title of this collection is Johnny Telden. And the Johnny in it is my father. I never let anybody call me Johnny because it was especially his name. And when I was growing up, we had three masters. The Catholic Church, the Unionist government, and my mother. I think my mother was the most dominant of them all. And there are fractured voices in this poem, but the loudest in the poem is the voice of my mother, Johnny Telden. Close that door in case someone hears you. In case someone catches a whiff of your dream. The parish priest, the RUC, them from the other side of the street. What have they and we haven't got? And balls and nothing to lose. Your man's a wino. He hasn't got a mate. He beats his wife up when he's stewed. Who do you think that you are, anyway? What makes you any different from us? In Ken's den, the women there know more than you ever know about your graces. Father McKinney is fond of his bottle. The other one likes the girls on his knees. The only one with cars round here are the parish priest. The parish priest and the RUC. Life kicks you around. Life kicks you around. Life toughens you up. You don't get what you want, but you get enough. In Wee Annie, the sarsaparilla is no different from a dirty cracked cup. Johnny, tell them not to go near the water. Johnny, tell him not to make a sound. Johnny, Tell him not to cause any bother. Johnny, close that door. I'll sit you down. Another one of my favorite poems from the first collection is Katie Said. And it's the kind of poem which is a blessing, and not even in disguise, you know. Sometimes poems just come to you, as I'm sure you all know yourselves, and they just seem to write themselves. And this poem came to me and wrote itself, and actually won a competition for me. And it's all about a young girl who I imagine is probably about 14 or 15, and she's a clever, maybe she's only 11, I'm not quite sure, people have different views on her. She's a very clever young lady in any case, and she's got a very good take on life, a very nice twist to it, which is not very usual at all. And I think it's page 51, just in case I run out of it. Katie said, at this time of year, if you look long and hard enough, you can make out the edges where all the realities meet. And there's a very fine gap where they don't connect. And we can climb up over one of the seams and swirl down on the other side into what she calls the land of dreams. Katie said, she's no time for fortune. Our music, none of those things. But all the time in the world for twists of sheep wool, cut on briars, age-old branches polish in the waves, the fine line at the water's edge, at the turn of the tide, and last night's nether dream. Katie said, there's a way if you know how to hitch onto a breeze, especially the young ones that like to please, and we can ride up into the trees or fall back down on our bare asses in the wet grass again. Katie said, when she grew up, she was going to be a top executive in one of these chemical companies that root their emissions deep down into the Earth's core so that global warming would become a fact of life. Katie laughed, and laughed, and I laughed too, and we climbed up through one of the hairline cracks in the reality frame, and we were never, ever seen again. End of poem. While brushing my teeth, I have to think of the minister's words. And I feel how lucky we are indeed to have a green minister like him to tell us not to be wasting the water runniness while brushing our teeth. And I wonder, has he noticed that it's been pissing the rain for weeks and the eco warriors are up to their knees in muck in their dugouts on the hill of Tara? But he says he wouldn't go there, for he's afraid he would get his hands dirty, and he'd have to go wash them all over again, wasting everybody's time and energy, including his own. Seamus Heaney thinks it's a disgrace, but nobody listens to him. I've been asked to read this poem by somebody, so I just do it. It's called The Wet Poem because I wrote it under the shower. And if you believe that, you believe anything. The pottery isn't working anymore, she says, and dumps me in the suburbia of her dreams, dodging deportation in a Bradbury domain like something wicked this way came. I skip the frontal lobe, breathe amygdala, and fall in with some serotonin taking in the sound. They want me to hang out, but remembering what happened before, all the grief I got from the heavies on the door, I declined. I'm too old for that, as you can see. Anyway, poetry is my thing. There isn't much room left for maneuver, though. The bed is tight, and I'm still relegated to a memoir in her dream. The demarcation line is fading, and something isn't working. Had worked before. My publishers will have to deal with it, come up with an angle to make it stick. Reports missing? No, that might do the trick. Then they pick me up at midnight, my memory is gone, I get back home, collect the check. What happens next? The poetry isn't working anymore. Depends what you think poetry is for. This old black magic that got us into it could be the death of us or a badly needed hit. There are couples out there ready to call it quits. They've had enough. The dream's gone sour. The poetry police cruise by on the hour in limousines they hijacked while we stopped off at the mall. Maybe poetry isn't worth it after all. Maybe book sales are all that counts. I shiver as in the blinking of an eye, she drops me from the scene, turns to the wall and mumbles something I can't make out. The siren in the distance infiltrates the night. I struggle for my corner of the blanket, hold on tight, wondering if the poetry really isn't working. She could be right. I grew up in Craigan, in Derry, which happened to be a Catholic enclave for Catholics. It would probably be more... I didn't realize when I was growing up that we were only Catholic, because I never thought there was anybody else, quite honestly. But we did actually have one Protestant in the street and one Jew, and they had special status. And recently, whenever we had the big night of poetry against racism, I wrote this poem, which is called Street Jargon, because as you know, when we were growing up, none of us were racist. We, in Ireland, we aren't racist, and we weren't brought up to be racist, and very clearly, I refute all attacks on me of being racist. We never had blacks in our streets, just two Protestants and a Jew. We were told to keep away from them. They were different from us, and we did what we were told to do. We teased Snotty Sweeney when he was having one of his attacks. We pointed at jilted Annie and made jokes behind her back. McLaughlin's son hung himself. He was barely in his teens. The family never lived down the shame, though we didn't say a thing. Our postman had a Scouse accent. We called him Snobby Tim. We thought he was better than us because he was ex-Marine. The Mormons, now they were all right to hate when they came knocking on your door. We all knew that we hated them, though we weren't sure what exactly for. You were allowed to spit at gypsies, but then you had to run like hell. We never opened our doors to them, for all they did was steal. They cursed at you and rant when they were turned away empty-handed. We ran after them and haunted them till they gave up and just moved on. When the troubles came, the Protestants did a moonlight flit. They felt safer among their own crowd on the other side of the bridge. None of us but had laid a hand on them, even though Mr. Hall was a big special. No one was ever harmed in Hart Street because of his religion. Mr. Spellman closed up shop and bailed his family out. They didn't belong to either crowd, but they must have had their doubts. The Indian insurance man, he never stood a chance. The mammy says she's not in. Then the door slammed in his face. We were taught to love our neighbors and to turn the other cheek. But you didn't get very far with that living in our street. if you said that we were racist,
I'd say you are lying through your teeth. For us, any one of us, I'm going to tell you, we never had black.
Thank you very much.